really just looking at why am I moving my body today? And potentially that might even mean taking a break from movement, which is totally okay. As much as our diet culture tells us it's not, it is okay because you'll reintroduce it. I do a tool with some of my clients called a movement inventory, where I'll have them write down all the different ways that they currently like to move, or maybe they like to move as a kid, and then what joy it brings them on a scale of 1 to 5. So maybe they write lifting and it brings them no joy, but they do it because they think that they should. I'm not saying don't lift, but all I'm about to say is like, look at the reasons and the ways you move your body.
Hello and welcome to Unlock Your Vitality with Magali on a Journey. I'm your host, Magali Matthew. Here we cover all things vitality, that is living full of energy. From gut health to spirituality, nutrition to movement, we peel back the layers and unlock ways to heal and feel our best selves, one conscious habit at a time. Stick around, let's dive on in. I'm so excited you're here. Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of the show. This is such a special episode with Ali. Ali Ray Pesta is a published author, speaker, a 200-hour certified yoga teacher, a certified REN coach, and an eating disorder recovery coach. As a little trigger warning, we do talk about eating disorders and her healing journey. And so if that is something that triggers you in any way and you choose to perhaps not listen to the episode, please listen to yourself and what's really important for you. Her passion is to empower individuals in finding purpose beyond their body and reclaim their relationship with their body, movement, and food. We talk a lot about this. She wrote a memoir called Beyond My Body, Recovering from a Complex Eating Disorder, Reclaiming Movement, and Finding My Worth. And I hope that all of you get it. It was truly such a beautiful conversation. I think all of you are going to be able to relate to parts of her story. We'll have to do a part two because we just kept talking and talking. And I also want to remind you that if any of you are interested in coming to a retreat, our retreat to reconnect to yourself is happening on March 16th and 17th in Sebastopol. That's in Sonoma, in California. It's about an hour drive north from San Francisco if you're local. It's just going to be a beautiful time connecting to ourselves, to nature, being nourished by delicious foods. We're going to have a really fun little tea party. There's going to be a creativity workshop and some inner child work. Yeah, it's going to be a beautiful time. And all the information is in the show notes, or you can DM me on Instagram or email me if you have any questions. Without further ado, let's get into this week's episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another amazing podcast episode. I'm so excited to have Ali on the show today. You're going to be so inspired by her beautiful resilience story. Ali, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
I can't wait to dive in. There's so many topics that we're going to get into. There's also so many topics that we have in common in our stories. I'm also a yoga teacher and used to be a big runner. So I'm really, really excited to dive into that. But for people to know you a little better, can you talk about the journey of who you are and how you got to become the person you are today?
Yeah. Oh, I love that you're also a yoga teacher and runner. So cool. So for me, I always start with, at the core of who I am is all around this idea of empowerment. I think we always are like, oh, on my journey, I want to go to this one thing or find this one thing or have a final destination. And I'm just such a core believer that we are not meant for one thing, but there's these core values that make us who we are. And for me, that's empowerment. And the reason why for me it's empowerment is just because I truly believe the beauty of empowerment is showing others that they're not alone. And so much of my story is rooted in the beliefs of feeling like I was alone and feeling like I was different and I was too much. And I grew up with this fundamental belief not from my parents, but more so just from other messages. And just, I think it was honestly something just rooted in me that I was always too much or never enough. Mm. And at the end of the day, I just wanted to be accepted. And so a lot of my journey spans through trying to grasp and pull onto different things to feel accepted. And for me, that came to fruition a lot with the way that I moved my body and the way that my body looked, which did end up leading to me getting an eating disorder when I was 17. And since then, that's really when a lot of the healing started and a lot of unlearning messages and a lot of figuring out who the hell I am, not who society tells me to be or not this box of where I should fit in. And so my journey along the way has had many stops, many twists and turns, but it all came back to how do I redefine who I am? How do I redefine what it means to love myself and what it means to just stand in my truth and my worth and my too muchness? And that all comes down to this idea of empowerment. So as of today, I am a yoga teacher, a run coach, a published author, a speaker, body image and eating disorder recovery coach. And it might seem like you're like, wow, there's all these things going on. But I think truly, as I talked about in my journey, there wasn't one thing that helped me heal. And so that's why I am so vast in what I do, because I don't think that there's one thing that helps someone else heal or help someone else on their journey. It's a compilation of all of these things. But at the root of everything in that sense is that empowerment, empowering someone to find the pieces of them that make themselves and empowering someone to just stand in their truth and take up space.
That's so beautiful. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing. I also love the idea that all of these different moments and all of these different parts are part of the healing journey. And I think that's why it's never really over also, right? Yeah. Because we continue to learn in those different ways. Talk to us about who you were maybe when you were younger. Like, who were you as a little girl? What are the things that you loved doing? And how do you think, or when do you think the thing started changing where you realize that you started doing things in order to have that worth and that feeling that you are enough?
Yeah. Oh, such a good question. I do a lot of talks on like college campuses and whatnot. And I actually start with this picture of me just like my mouth is wide open. I'm giving like peace signs up in the air. I'm about 7 years old. And I think like that picture, when I think about myself, like that captures so much of my essence. I was wearing like pink sequin tutus and trying every sport and loved theater and loved writing and just so multifaceted. And everything that I did, though, I did to the nth degree. It was always 120%. It wasn't, okay, we're just going to like do this half-ass. It was, we're going and just living life large. And so much of that, I think, was amazing, but I think it also consumed me because I couldn't just be average at something while I love to do all of these different things and have this vivacious energy and just like zest for life. I also, to some degree, believed that if I did anything average or ordinary, it was nothing. There's a chapter in my book called Ordinarily Nothing. And I started to believe that unless I'm exceptional, unless I'm changing the world, then I'm worthless. I'm just taking up space. And by taking up space, that's not good. You need to be doing something with your life. So I don't think like, I can't pinpoint this is the moment that it changed. I think those messages just continue to expand. And I think hearing from different people of, oh my gosh, you're going to like be on Broadway one day or do these things. And it was awesome to hear. But for me, as having perfectionist, high drive, determination, all of these things was kind of that recipe of, well, if I don't do that, I'm a failure at life. And I think to a big shift in a lot of my messages was more so also around my body. I was one of the first to mature as a young girl, was one of the first to get my periods. I had double D boobs by the time I was in 7th grade. And so I just always felt like something is wrong with my body. And from a variety of different experiences, it was truly like I didn't have control over my body. And so I really wanted to shrink it. I didn't want to be seen as something that was like liked by the male gaze. It was, I don't want to be exceptional by my body. So I'm going to make it undesirable. And I think a lot of the messages that fueled my eating disorder was I need to be exceptional. And then I started to realize, oh, I can be exceptional by how I move my body, which then also changed my body so much that it was a way to truly control.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing. It's interesting how you talk about the fact that you wanted to make your body undesirable, because I think often in the realm of body image and eating disorders, people think of wanting to shift things in order for it to be desirable. So that's a really interesting, I think, unique experience that you had. And I'm sure, as you said, the root of part of your experience has been like feeling alone. And we know that we all have experiences that are similar and we can connect to that. Can you talk more about then how that kind of went into this journey of becoming an athlete and what that looked like and how it evolved for you in this way?
Yeah, so I tried every sport under the sun growing up. There's actually a chapter in a book called Athlete I Am Not. Because again, that belief of I have to be the best. So I was pretty athletic and I had a lot of drive and determination. So I would outwork anyone no matter what sport I was playing. And volleyball was like became my main sport. But I also had this belief that it wasn't worth my time if I wasn't exceptional. And I think in regards to like my body and the control aspect, so I experienced sexual assault at a really young age. And so because of that, from 12 years old, I was like, my body's not mine. And so for me, I started to use exercise as a way that I thought, okay, if I can become strong in my body, if I can make it undesirable and no one would want me, then I don't have to worry about that. And it would be like, it was more so undesirable by like a man slash boy versus, but I wanted my body to look perfect, but be like super like fit and thin, but not be desirable sexually. And so all of that kind of played into even just the way I performed and how much time I spent at the gym, and to some degree, like with volleyball, it actually forced me, unfortunately, to have to stop playing all my sport. It took away that from me because my life was now consumed by exercise addiction and spending hours and hours in the gym. So I didn't have the energy to be an athlete. But all in all to say is I think it just goes back to every journey, especially with eating disorders, is so unique. And there's not one look and there's not one. It's not just this idea that I just want to be thin, because often that's not it. Often it's not about the body. It's trying to create some sense of control when you feel out of control. And so food, exercise, controlling how your body looks are all mechanisms to gain this false sense of control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that part of your journey. And I think there's such beauty in being able to go through that healing process and being able to share in the way that you're doing with us now, and also in the way that you've done with your book. I'm curious, before we get into the memoir process, when did you realize that these were things that you talked about, exercise addiction and the different ways in which you were having an eating disorder? Like, when did you realize this is a problem? Did you have people around you help you identify that? And then how was the healing process? How did it begin for you?
I did not think it was a problem. I thought I was the epitome of health. I was like, look at me. I'm so strong. I eat so clean. So a lot of the depth of my eating disorder too started. I started this diet with my mom that was just a very restrictive diet. And I just was so engulfed in it. And I was like, look at me. I'm eating so clean. I'm getting all these praises from people. Look at you. You're so determined. You, this body, all of these things. So no way in my mind thought that I was sick. I was like, mm-hmm. no, I'm finally the best. I'm finally exceptional. I finally achieved my goal. And I ended up going to Europe. It was summer going into my senior year of high school. It was on like a school trip for our Spanish club. And in Europe, I had what's called refeeding syndrome. And so this happens usually for like very malnourished children. And what happens is if you refeed at too fast of a rate, so I was intaking so much more than my body had been used to, and I wasn't exposing the same energy that it had been used to. So my legs swelled up to twice the size. I couldn't walk. I couldn't feel my legs really. I was always out of breath and I had no idea what was going on. The professor that was there at the time was like, oh, I think it's just really bad jet lag. Like we've been flying from country to country. You should be fine. My parents were like, no, we think something's wrong, but they didn't want to admit me in European hospitals, which I'm grateful at the time that I was able to come back. But the moment I came back, I told my parents on the call, they're like, we won't put you in the hospital as long as you agree to go to the doctors the moment we get back. So I got off the flight. I went to the doctor's office. It was my pediatrician and my heart rate was at 26. And they were like, you're going to the hospital right now. I kicked and screamed. We ended up going home for like a few hours and then going. But once I got to the hospital, I finally was kind of just met with the harrowing truth of this is not healthy. And the doctor said if I would have continued living the way that I had been living and probably would have like worked out because of everything that happened in Europe, I probably had, they said, max 1 week left to live.
Oh my gosh.
So if I would have continued on, that probably would have been it. So I'm not super religious, but my aunt passed away from cancer and I carried a stone that she made that had like butterfly wings with me everywhere I went. And I say to this day, like, I swear she was watching over me and carrying me through. But I think, you know, the journey started there. But I don't think my healing journey, I was hospitalized again. I don't think my true healing journey started till, so that was my senior year of high school. When I went to college, my freshman year at Ohio State, about a month in, I realized I can't keep living like this. If I even want to live, it had gotten pretty out of control again. And that was when I called my mom and I said, I can't do this anymore. And I can't do this alone. I need help. This week is actually Eating Disorder Awareness Week. And I shared that on my Instagram in the sense of it was the first time that I realized I don't have to do this alone. And going all the way back to what we started this conversation about, it was the first time I realized I'm not alone. And there are people around me that can help me to heal. And so I ended up going to treatment for about 3.5 months. And that definitely like changed my life. But the healing journey since then, I mean, it's so many ups and downs, and I've been in recovery for over 10 years, and I do think I'm at like the healthiest mind, body, soul place I've ever been. But there's so many components. Again, it's not one thing that I think helped me to heal. It's so multifaceted. But I think the core of it was deciding for myself that I don't want to live like this, and taking that agency over my life and knowing that there was an ending to my story that did not involve my eating disorder.
Yeah. Wow. It's so powerful to hear you share. And you can feel, yeah, the passion of somebody who's obviously gone through so much and who's also on, I don't want to say on the other side, because that sounds like it's like there's, you know, two sides to it. And I know it's a much more complicated concept than that, but it's really beautiful. I'm curious. You talked about obviously being admitted and that being a really critical part of your healing journey. For maybe somebody listening who's struggling through that, maybe they've also, you know, gone through being admitted. Like, what other things day to day kind of helped you? How did your lifestyle change? Did you go back to college? And like, what tools did you bring with you? What did that look like?
Yeah. I also want to preface that, like, similar to what I talked about earlier, is there's no one look and no one severity. So you don't have to feel like, oh, I didn't get admitted, so I'm not sick enough. If food or movement or any of that you feel is preventing you from living your life, you are deserving of help. So I just want to preface that, don't look at my story of like, oh, well, she got admitted, I didn't, so I don't deserve help. You do. Yes, that's what my journey was like, but every single degree is just as worthy and deserving of support and help and recovery. I think for me, one of the biggest pieces was writing. My sister bought me a journal in the hospital, and I hadn't written for months. It was actually what fueled me to start thinking about potentially writing a memoir. And because my mind was so spinning and it was consumed by the voices of my eating disorder, I needed to put pen to paper to, one, slow down my mind, and to, two, just make sense of everything that was happening, and also start to rediscover, who am I? What's my voice? Because right now, all it sounds like is my eating disorder voice. I don't even know what my voice sounds like anymore. So journaling for me was a huge piece of it. And, you know, it doesn't have to look any certain way. It's just putting pen to paper, getting the thoughts out of your head, trying to slow that thought process down. I also think, you know, it's such a multifaceted recovery process. And especially if movement is a part of your journey. I use movement instead of exercise just because it's so much more expansive and it includes so many different things. Walking around, cleaning your house, dancing, that's all movement. But really having to reassess that relationship with movement and really understand, why are you moving your body? Are you moving your body as permission to eat? Are you moving your body because it's going to change the way your body looks? Are you moving your body as a form of purging to some degree? And so really looking at the whys behind movement. I was fortunate enough to work with a treatment team. So I had a movement plan, just like I had a meal plan, and it was supervised. So that's not accessible to everyone. And I recognize that. But I think really just looking at, why am I moving my body today? And potentially that might even mean taking a break from movement, which is totally okay. As much as our diet culture tells us it's not, it is okay, because you'll reintroduce it. I do a tool with some of my clients called a movement inventory, where I'll have them write down all the different ways that they currently like to move, or maybe they like to move as a kid, and then what joy it brings them on a scale of 1 to 5. So maybe they write lifting and it brings them no joy, but they do it because they think that they should. I'm not saying don't lift, but all I'm about to say is, like, look at the reasons and the ways you move your body. Yeah. You know, a lot of it was too, like, making lists of fear foods and reintroducing that. Therapy, I've been in therapy for now over 10 years, so that has been huge. And then I think, like, so much of it too is community. And community doesn't have to look like 100 people. Community can be one or two people in your circle that you trust, that you know you can go to. Because again, eating disorders are so, and many mental health journeys are so isolating and such silent disorders, because no one can often see it. Unless you fit the stereotypical look, typically we can't see what someone might be going through. And so by having that community where you can speak up, there are also so many different resources, like ANAD offers weekly support groups, Project Heal. So there's a wide resources of support specifically for eating disorders. And then, you know, I work with clients from like a coaching perspective, and I've had a variety of like coaches and nutritionists and therapists. So all in all to say, I think like having a community, having a team, taking it day by day, and knowing that some days are going to be really shitty and that's okay. And some days are going to be good and that's okay. And moments are going to be shitty, moments are going to be good. And a step back is not a relapse. And you're going to have all the ups and downs, and it's going to look nonlinear. And that is totally okay. Healing is not a ladder. It is a spiral circle, all the different things. And once you start to embrace, like, oh, it's not just check off these boxes and then I'm healed. It's a constant process and it's a constant evolution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. How did it go from, I mean, I love that journaling was a part of your healing journey and then eventually led you to write a memoir. How did it go from journaling as a tool to help you to eventually being like, oh, I want to put this into a book and share it with the world?
Yeah. So I've written my whole life. I started writing when I was 5. I used to write my mom like speeches as a kid growing up. Because again, it was like kind of like how I just made sense of everything. And I'm definitely a words person. So I just love the beauty and the power that words can hold. And I hadn't written for so long because I had no thoughts in my head to write about when I was sick. And one of my first journal entries, I wrote, one day I'm going to write a book about this. And I think this goes back to what I started about, was that piece of empowerment of knowing that I'm not alone in this, and that by writing my story and sharing my story, it's going to be a place and a tool to connect with others and to empower them to know they're also not alone and that there is another side to this. And so, you know, that was in 2013. So it took me 10 years to actually write my memoir. And it wasn't all every year like active writing. I was a technical / creative writing minor in college. So a lot of times I was spending writing in there, but I'd always just written. And I just knew like one day I want to put all these pieces together. And so in March of 2022 is when I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to start sitting down. I had just gotten back from a trip in Hawaii. I just gotten out of a pretty toxic relationship. And again, it was coming back knowing writing heals me. And so every night, it's vignette style. So it's a bunch of short stories that you can read on their own or come together to make a story. And so when I was in Hawaii, I had kind of the outline idea of like, these are the chapters. It just kind of came to me on a beach. And so I just started taking like chapter by chapter, and each night I would write, and it started with one chapter a night. And then at my height of writing, I was writing about like 6 hours a day. I'd work a full day and then I'd just write, and it felt like it was just an overflowing of words. And I think, you know, if anyone's like, oh, I want to write my story or do this, it's like giving yourself, similar to healing journey, like giving yourself time and grace and compassion. And when we try to force it, it often doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And I spent so many years, I remember walks with my friend on trails, walking some mountains and being like, I just want to write my book. And she's like, it'll come. It'll come.
Aww.
And I think that's what that overflowing was. It was like, finally, I had enough distance to actually let it and allow it and give it that space to truly organically come. And I was just kind of in a place for it to start flowing. So yeah, it's been a long process since then, but I'd say that was kind of how the writing process started to flow and begin and really just come to start the book.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. Also, I just want to read out your title because it's so powerful for anybody who doesn't yet know about it, but it's called Beyond My Body, Recovering from a Complex Eating Disorder, Reclaiming Movement and Finding My Worth. It's like so, so powerful. Congrats on just putting it out there. And I really encourage everybody, we'll add the link in the show notes for anybody who's wanting to read it and continue to get to know you better and deepen the understandings of your healing journey. I love what you said about trusting that it'll come. So I started a tech startup when I was 23, 24, and then did that for 6 years, totally burnt out, and then transitioned into being a holistic health coach. And throughout the process, I also did my yoga teacher training and all those things. So, but one of the things that I have been able to understand now that I'm feeling in that safe space is that so many things are surfacing, right? It's like once you're in a place where you're feeling good, you can look back on that journey and see how not okay certain things were and how much you were just like going through and in survival mode for, yeah, just because that's what you needed to do to keep going. And sometimes when I think about the things and the stories that are a part of who I am, and I love writing and I've always written, and journaling has been a big part of my healing story, I've thought of creating and writing and putting it out there. And there's a fear of like the stories that are intertwined with other people's lives and how they would reflect and feel reading those things. I'm curious if you experienced that and if you can share.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, even just to circle back to what you were sharing of, you know, looking and seeing and just like the pieces that you accepted as okay. I think even sometimes we accept those pieces of okay when we don't have as much worth in ourselves. And then finally, when we understand like, oh no, I can stand up for myself, or actually that's not okay, or I shouldn't be treated like this. And then if someone doesn't honor that, okay, cool, awesome. Then that's okay. That's that boundary you're setting. So it is so wild just looking back at different experiences, and the more and more we understand what we deserve and our own self-worth and that truly like loving ourselves, it's just so beautiful what you realize you no longer accept and that you're okay to release and what you actually mm-hmm. are okay to let in. So I just wanted to touch on that.
Love that.
But in regards to the people, oh yeah. So I think, well, one part, especially with memoir, is making sure that every story you tell, it's from an I and your perspective and your point of view. Like, for example, yes, I talk about stories of being in treatment, but I only share my experience of being in treatment. I don't talk about the person next to me unless it was a conversation we were having. But at the same time, it's one of those things of just really accepting we're all human, and mm-hmm. the people in my stories, sure, there's some things that, yeah, it was kind of shitty what some things happened, and it doesn't make them a bad person. And having that grace there, I did change a lot, majority of names. So there is that, like you keep the anonymity and take out removing identity factors and whatnot. But I think for me, the hardest part was a lot of the stories with my parents. I love them, but I grew up in a really fat phobic house. My dad growing up always, it's actually the prologue of my book called Fitting Through Doors. When I was growing up, he used to always say, don't eat that or else you won't fit through the door. And I just had this rooted belief of, oh my gosh, if I become fat, that's equal to death. And it was just so many different beliefs and so much body shame. And my mom grew up always like commenting on her body and her elephant arms. And, you know, my dad did actually, when I was in treatment during college, actually came out to me that he had an eating disorder. And there is a genetic component for eating disorders. And so, you know, understanding like so much of the roots of the different beliefs that I was raised with, that really also just humanized it, and understanding that there's probably a lot of healing that maybe my dad hasn't even done. And mm-hmm. so all in all to say, I think I'm fortunate that we've gone through so much family therapy that we were able to have these productive conversations, but there's so many lessons that you get with sharing just this and knowing that it's truly just the human experience. We all make mistakes. We learn from them. I did not say great things, and I share all of those too. So I think one, if you're in that place that you feel comfortable having a conversation with that person, I would share the pieces with my parents ahead of time. But at the end of the day, it's your story. It's your truth. And memoir is really unique because it kind of to some degree like toggles the line of fiction and nonfiction. Like, yes, it's nonfiction, but it's crafted from your memory. And so memory is very subjective. And so my mom could read it and she's like, wait, I thought I said this. And I was like, well, I remember you saying that. And so all I'm all to say is like, there's also those components as well. So having those conversations with people can also be a beautiful way to just create that dialogue, but also anonymizing when you feel necessary, and then making sure when you are writing and sharing that it is coming from your experience and sharing your experience and interactions, not sharing someone else's story and your interpretation of their pieces.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, for your memoir, like the way that you're describing your experience is at the end of the day to help others recognize the pieces of themselves, right? And so I think it's not about like bashing or whatever what you've gone through other people and how other people have been a part of it. But yeah, I definitely see that aspect of whether it's your parents or other loved ones that have been a part of your story that could be really difficult. I think it's beautiful that you talk about the fact that it could be like a way to heal that relationship though, and like bringing it up with them and having a conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think to your one point too, of like a way to learn, I've had a lot of parents or moms even reach out and say, wow, like, thank you for your story because it helped me to realize, oh, the way I speak about my body actually might be impacting my daughter or son or they, whatever that looks like, right? And so it's just so interesting to see that I've even had parents reach out to my parents being like, thank you for letting Allie share these pieces of your story, because it's helped us as a family or as a household really understand the way that we talk with each other. And so I think there's this false sense of everything needs to be good when we share, when in reality, it's like those hard parts, those really uncomfortable things that you don't want to talk about, but those are the pieces that make us feel less alone. Those are the pieces in the stories that actually connect us. And those are the pieces in a tactful way is where the vulnerability and like true building processes lie.
Yeah. And I think we're also generations can help each other learn. Like you talk about your parents, obviously our parents' generations like also learned it from their parents and it was a different world. And fat shaming was something that was a part of the culture. Like I, even when we like see, I don't know, movies that are a little bit older or shows, like you can just see it. And it's like shocking to us because it's no longer, I mean, it's still a part of our culture, but it's not as okay because, yeah, that's what the new generations do. They help in uncovering the way that things need to change. And that's beautiful. And we obviously have so much to learn from their experience and their expertise. But yeah, I love that.
Totally. So good.
This has been such a good conversation. I cannot believe how fast time is going. We ask at the end of every episode a few questions for everybody. So the first one is, how do you unlock your vitality these days?
Oh, wow. That is powerful. I think two things really come to mind. I think lately, unlocking my vitality means doing the opposite of what I've been conditioned to do my whole life of go, go, go. And instead, it's been so much of slowing down and being present and just embracing like every single moment. I'd say like this past weekend was one of my favorite days that I've ever had. And it was just so simple and so slow and so just like, wow, this is life. And life doesn't have to be grandiose to be worthy. And you don't have to be exceptional to be worthy. So I think really, truly allowing myself to slow down. And then I think the other thing is I've literally just had so many dance parties. Like it'll be 5 a.m. and I'm like, we're just going to throw a dance party. And it's just like so fun of just reconnecting to that inner child inside me to just truly make me feel alive again and just move my body in a way that just feels so playful and joyful.
I love that. That's so beautiful. I also realized that we didn't get into talking much about the running aspect. And I know that it's something that I was curious about just having been a runner myself. When the healing journey started and what you mentioned about like the go, go, go and wanting to slow down, for me, that's when I really started looking at running differently and like what it means to train for a half versus what it means to just go out in nature and on trails and go for a run.
Yes.
I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Yeah. Oh, running holds just like such a special place in my heart. I started running when I was 8 with my dad. And running for me, I never did it competitively. I did every other sport except for running because it was the one thing for me that just I held true as just being my therapy. It's like the one thing that just helped me to truly clear my head, even more so than writing at times. And I definitely think, I mean, my relationship with running did become to a place that was addictive and not healthy. But as I started to reclaim my relationship with running, it's definitely been a lot of ups and downs. And the past 2 years, I've been like in and out of injury. This past year, I actually just had 2 hip surgeries, labral tear surgeries. And so this is so fitting. Literally next Monday, I'm going to be starting my return to running protocol, which is like 30 seconds at a time. But I truly am really nervous. I am excited, but I'm nervous because I don't want it to be go, go, go. I've been in such a place of just like allowing things to be simple and intentional and slowing down. And so as I get back to running, really looking at it as running can get back to being therapeutic. It doesn't have to be competitive, because as I got into more running, I was doing like marathons and halves. And don't get me wrong, I love doing all that stuff. It makes me feel alive. But to your point of, it's just so simple and beautiful to just run. I do like naked runs, which mean like no watch, no nothing. Like I'm a old school use map my run or use nothing. And I just want to feel like my feet on the pavement and the breath in my lungs and just know I'm alive, not how many calories I burn or what speed I'm going at and all that stuff. So all in all to say is I do think running can be such a beautiful tool to slow down, even though you're moving faster, when we truly allow ourselves to just get into more of that meditative state rather than focusing on like, I have to hit these certain metrics for the run to be worthy.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I feel like when I started realizing that I was spending more time after a run, like analyzing the data and the numbers, that it was like, I wasn't asking myself inside, like just my intuition being like, does this feel good? Like, did that run feel good or not? And like, do I just want to slow down the next one? Or do I maybe like want to run some anger out? Because for me, it's also been super therapeutic. So I love that.
Yes. I always ask my athletes like after a run, like, how did you feel? I never once comment on times or paces, even if they upload that data. I just pretend it's not there for the most part. And I'm just like, how did you feel? How does your body feel? Mm-hmm. How does your mind feel? How do you feel? And that's all I care about. You're feeling good, like whatever that looks like. So yeah, I love what you shared there.
Yeah, that's awesome. The next one is a fun one, is what is on your nightstand?
Ooh. Okay. I feel like I'm like low key on my nightstand. I don't feel like I always, it's dry as hell in Colorado. So I always have like one water bottle, sometimes two, Vaseline, because the lips are getting chapped. Usually a book here and there. I recently just finished the book by Haley Jacobson, Old Enough. That was so good. So I need a new book soon. And then usually just like some type of essential oil from time to time, like lavender essential oil. But I'm a pretty simple person. I don't usually have a lot going on the nightstand.
I love that question because it just gives us a little insight into who you are.
Yes, I love that.
Love it. The next one is, if you could give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
Probably you were never too much.
Yeah. I love that.
Take up space, and your too muchness is what makes you you and is what makes people love you, and that, yeah, embrace all the sides of who you are, because you were never too much.
Yeah, so beautiful. And the last one is, what are you saying no to these days?
I think I've been really intentional of noticing my like energetic shifts and noticing what makes me feel more alive versus what makes me feel like drained. And so I think getting really intentional, and before I've been such a yes person. So I'm like saying yes to everything, but you can't say yes to everything. You got to say no to some things. And so really just being intentional about what is maybe more draining with my energy, whether that's people, whether that's experiences, whether that's things, whether that's going out with friends, and just noticing like, okay, does this feel like it's like taking away from my energy or making me downshift? And if so, it's okay to say no.
Yes, exactly. That's why I asked this question, because I think it can be so helpful to just ask ourselves continuously, what are the things that we need to say no to? And I definitely say you have this question in there because I've not said no enough throughout my life, and totally. I'm learning to again. Before we close, I just want to ask if you'd like to share any kind of like products and services. If people are interested in finding you, where can they find you? Tell us all the details.
Yes. As you mentioned, my book is called Beyond My Body, Recovering from a Complex Eating Disorder, Reclaiming Movement and Finding My Worth. And you can buy that on Amazon. I do no one knows this, so I'm going to be releasing it first here. I just finished the audiobook version of it last night. So,
wow, that's amazing.
Besides like four friends and my family, no one knows. So now everyone knows. All everyone listening to this knows. So that will be coming out soon. I will be posting all about it on my socials, which mostly Instagram, TikTok. I've tried to do it, not for me. So mostly Instagram at @AllieRayPesta, my full name. And then I do offer one-on-one coaching. So really take that holistic approach. So yes, I'm a run coach, a yoga teacher, body image, eating disorder recovery, disordered eating, intuitive eating, like kind of just the whole scope, because I really want to see one-on-one, like customizing what works for each individual, talking about so many tools that we discussed during here, and just taking that person first approach. So I do offer coaching if that is something that people are interested in.
I love it. Thank you so much. This was such a special conversation. Thank you for being willing to share and be vulnerable. And your story is definitely empowering. So I understand that that's at the core of your values. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been such a joy. So I really appreciate it.
All right, guys, we'll see you next week. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you loved this episode as much as I did. If you are enjoying the show, please feel free to rate and review, share it with a friend. This is truly how we are able to grow. So whether you are listening on Kajabi directly, on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, or on Google, any way that you can just share it with a friend, and even through social media, letting us know what you loved about it, what you got out of the episode. And if you haven't yet, you can subscribe or rate and review depending on all the places that you get your podcasts. But I just wanted to say a big, big thank you. If this is the first episode you've ever listened to, or if you've been here for a while, or if you've been here since the very beginning, Unlocking My Vitality has been a beautiful journey into learning, actually. And this podcast has really helped me learn through different people, through your feedback, through, just seeing and hearing beautiful women and the work that they're doing and sharing it with the world. So thank you so much for being here, and I'll see you next week. Bye.